Welcome to Inside the Studio, presented by iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Joe Levy. Okay, so on the home edition of the show, our quarantine correspondent, Jordan Runtog, has talked with musicians who found new ways to make music and play shows during these pandemic times. I mean, my living room has a pretty broad booking policy since lockdown started from the comfort of my couch. I've watched a lot of shows, indie rock, folk rock, DJ battles, punk rock, country. If you stream it, me and the cats will watch it, or at least I'll watch it. The cats are a little more finicky than I am. But this week's guest, Melissa Etheridge, has taken things up a notch. After she broadcast more than 50 shows on Facebook, she basically launched her own network out of her garage. Some people make their garage into a home recording studio. She turned it into a home TV studio. And on Etheridge TV, which is subscription-driven, she does cover songs one night, a talk show the next. She throws in a mix of home videos and classic old clips sometimes. There are live concerts. And Jordan talked with her about how she built all of this, like built it, literally, by hand, no road crew. And also how she's been coping with things personally and professionally during these really challenging times. And that's why we started the home edition of Inside the Studio, to let you know how artists were coping with things right now, how it's impacting their lives and the way they make music. And there really hasn't been a more personally moving episode than this one so far. So if you enjoy it, be sure to listen to the iHeartRadio podcast that Jordan hosts, which is called Rivals, Music's Greatest Feuds, and which is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guest today is a bona fide music icon who's gone to the top of the charts with hits like Come to My Window and I Want to Come Over. The grit and power of her vocals and the raw passion of her live performances saw her mentioned in the same breath as Janis Joplin, but rock stardom is just part of her story. In 1993, she proudly answered questions about her sexuality with the title of her breakthrough album, Yes, I Am. Since coming out, she's been a trailblazer for the LGBTQ community and a tireless social activist. She's also one of rock's greatest survivors, overcoming cancer, divorce, and most recently in May 2020, the loss of her son Beckett to opioid addiction. Now she's using the personal tragedy to help others and make a difference. I'm so thrilled to welcome Melissa Etheridge.
That's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, it means the world to me. So many things I want to talk to you about. I'm a huge fan, but the purpose of this show is to check in with artists and see how they've been coping with lockdown, which is obviously something that's impacted all of us, but you've been coping with so much more. If you're comfortable sharing, how have you been doing?
Thank you very much. I'm doing okay. I got to tell you, when the pandemic and everything hit and realizing that there was going to be no, you know, personal performance appearances, there's no audiences this year. You know, that was a certain low and a certain depression. And then to lose a family member is like, oh my God, I'm even deeper in this hole. And it does challenge one's own personal belief in life and in getting through things and all the things I've ever, you know, been talking about in my life. So I am doing well. We've been healing. This epidemic of opioid addiction, you know, I'm by far not the only one, unfortunately. So it's something I, of course, now I'm very passionate about but thank you. We're doing fine. We're healing every day.
So glad to hear that. Last year I had the honor of speaking to David Crosby, and he said something that I'll never forget. He said, music is a healing force. It makes us better. What is it about music for you that is such a healing force? What does it give to you?
Oh, I realized a long time ago, the healing that I get from singing and performing music is this intense you know, taking the energy of music, this creation of vibration that then affects us emotionally. And as much as it affects somebody else, oh boy, 10 times it affects me when I'm singing, when I'm performing, when I'm, it's a way of release. It's a cleaning out, a blowing out of any, you know, stagnant emotions that could, you know, grow into, you know, something physical. So it's absolutely saved me more than once.
I've read that you've read a lot about quantum physics, and it's such a great logical explanation of putting good vibrations out there. You know, I mean, it's so funny.
Yeah, we've heard the term good vibrations, but if you really dig down into the science, there are indeed good vibrations. You know, we are a vibrational universe. That's how we're made. Strings vibrate. Things vibrate into matter. You know, we're all vibrating. And when you really start thinking about that, then you understand the importance of a good feeling, which is a good vibration. You feel different when you think a good thought to you know, music and the vibrations that music cause. And you know, there's study after study of how these vibrations affect us physically.
I watched your Heal Me concert, a beautiful performance. How did you know it was time to get back out there and keep making music?
Because I had a desire. I always feel better after a performance, period. No matter what, I always feel better. So it's that release. And my wife and I, when we lost our son, we were doing these free concerts every day here in this office right here. And we were, you know, enjoying that. And then when that tragedy happened, we stopped and we just sort of said, okay, we let the wave go over us and go, okay, now what does this mean? Where are we? What are we doing? And we put together, we changed our garage into a real, like, because we'd sit here in the office and go, God, I wish I had more cameras. Oh, I wish I had, because we're both in, I mean, she's in television and I'm in, you know, music. We're both in entertainment. And we just kept like dreaming up, oh, what if we could do this? What if we could do that? And then all of a sudden we had time in front of us and we said, let's do it. And every day we went out there every single day and it just healed us because we were building something. We were growing. We were moving forward. And that really, 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 really helped us. And so there came a time when everything was up. We were, you know, ready to take it on air. And I told my people, I said, okay, this is the time. I want to bring this back into my life. I miss performing. It's just healing.
I mean, it just, the studio looks incredible. It looks like you created like the Fillmore in your garage or something. It looks gorgeous. I mean, you know, some people make banana bread during the pandemic. Some people are playing puzzles. You made your own TV station. How did this idea come about? Like, what was the genesis of that?
Oh, well, wow. You got to go back about 20 years, actually. My wife and I met because we wanted to do it. I was auditioning for she had done the 70s show and she was going to do the 80s show. And we met. I auditioned for that, but it didn't happen. But for 20 years, we've been pitching the idea of a television show. And it was back when reality shows were brand new. And the idea of following a celebrity around was brand new. And we were sort of pitching it. And everyone's like, I don't know. And then all of a sudden, the Osbournes were on. And then that took off. And so then we started pitching an idea of a scripted reality, sort of this, you know, our life, but... you know, but scripted. And then, you know, of course, then all the Office and all those came out. Well, okay, at least we're at the cutting edge here and we know what we're thinking is not crazy. And so the last few years, we started thinking there's a way of taking everything that we have. There's a way of taking the music and the experiences and the people and all the things we want to say and reach and all the things we're passionate about and making entertainment out of it, making a television. And so... we said, look, I don't want to be beholden to someone else's platform. You know, I don't want to, because we were doing it on Facebook, but that there's a limitation to that. And I said, there's got to be a way that we can be in control of everything and just have a platform that can then reach people. And we found Maestro, which it's perfect. They're like, whatever you want to do, this is the platform. Here's what you can do. And we just ran with it. And it's so funny because what we're doing out there, we keep running into difficulties because no one's doing what we're doing. We're doing a multi-camera, live multi-camera shoot streaming. And so we've got this, we've plastered together, at this point, six different cameras that are all different, wow, of all different varieties, because, you know, our budget, we have no budget. So, you know, so we got a few here. Logitech was, they sent us some of theirs, but theirs go straight into the camera, and we're using straight into the computer. We're using a switcher. So we have two separate platforms that we're filming from, going into one platform, going into the Maestro. So every now and then we have, like, problems. We're like, what's this? And everyone's like, I don't know. We've never done this before. Maybe you should do this. And so it's fun because I get to do what I love. I've got my audio end set up. I've got a Yamaha Q 1000 or whatever the numbers are after that. And, you know, which is like a live mixing recording board. And I've got that set up. And my sound man, you know, over the phone was helping me learn exactly how to run that. Yeah. And so I've got, and I had in my warehouse, I had a bunch of audio equipment just over the years that I've collected. So I went in and I got all that out. And I, you know, so I've got all the old microphones and cords and XLR cables. And so I wired up the thing myself, my wife, you know, setting up the cameras. And we're just like, well, what if we could do this? Well, let's find out how to do it. And we just keep going down this road. And it's actually, it can be very frustrating, but it's also very satisfying when we figure it out. Very satisfying.
What was the expression? Chef, cook, and bottle washer, or something like that. That is you. You are doing everything. Sound, lights, building the set physically. That's incredible.
We learned things about lights. When it got to the lighting point, we just looked at each other and went, wow, I really appreciate the crews that we have had. You know, the my lighting director, her whole, you know, camera crew that she used to have. And we were like, we have a real appreciation for these artisans. And we started going, oh, we had no idea. It's like, do we use 5 watts or 200 watts? You know, I have no idea. And we went to the Home Depot and just got every kind of light bulb there was just to see what looks good on camera. We really studied how to light it. That was probably the most intense. I mean, the camera part's pretty intense, but the lighting is a big deal.
That is amazing. And there's so much to the programs you do. I mean, there's the chat shows, there's obviously the concerts, there's watching some of the throwback videos that you have, which are so cool. There been any treasures that you found in those videos?
I tell you, I could stay up all night watching those old videos just because you live your life and you do things and you're moving on, and year by year goes by, and pretty soon you look back and go, oh my God, it was 30 years ago I did this. And I can look back now and think, oh, I used to think, you know, anything from, you know, I'm too fat to, you know, which is just a devastating thought that so many of us have. To, you know, oh, that song wasn't very good. To, you know, oh, I just really want to get out of this. I want to, you know, achieve my goals. And being on the other side of it now and going back. And we're this week, last week and this week, we're playing a video from the last club date, the last bar. You know, I played in this women's bar in Pasadena and also one in Long Beach, but I played there for over 4 years, you know, every week. And it was the last gig, and this guy came in and filmed it. It's a, you know, really poor lighting VHS, but, you know, it you get it and the sound, and sometimes it goes off, but I just watch it and go, oh my God, if I had no idea what I was back then. And it's, wow. It really gets to my heart, and it's fun sharing that with the fans. It's like, you know, it's really, really cool. They seem to enjoy it.
What would you tell that person in that video now?
I'd say, stop worrying. Chill. It's about the journey. It is not about getting somewhere, that because there's no there. There's no place where all of a sudden everyone's gathered in a room and said, well, you made it. You know, that doesn't exist. It absolutely doesn't exist, because even when you do reach the point of, oh, I got that Grammy nomination, that's not what fills you up. What fills you up is the journey to it. and through it and then beyond it and dreaming more dreams and, oh, I want this and, oh, I hope I can do this and keeping those dreams in front of you and then enjoying every step of the way. That's what I would say. I'd say just chill out. It's about the journey. You're going to be fine.
Some of my favorite parts of the show is watching you and your daughter Bailey sing together. I saw a version of Gently We Row recently. Do you make a lot of music together around the house?
A fair amount. I wouldn't say a lot. She's actually working from home here, and she works, you know, in a bank in from New York City, and she's able to go online and work here. And so, you know, we don't do a lot, but over the years, it's funny, people ask me about my kids. They're like, you know, well, do they want to go into, you know, the music business? And I say none of them have the, like, that burning desire, dream to do that. They all have their own burning desires. And I think that they've grown up on the inside of it, and they've seen how much work it is. And, you know, and they don't have this sort of dream like I did of being, oh, famous and, you know, making music. And that's not, and my daughter said, people will tell her, oh, you play the guitar really well. She's like, no, I don't. If you knew my family, you would know that I'm the worst guitar player in my family. That's where she comes from. So to answer your question, yeah, we make some music, but it's not like all the time at all.
Well, speaking of making music, your most recent album, The Medicine Show, came out a little over a year ago. What are you working on now musically that you're really proud of? Can you say?
Oh, well, yeah, I've got a project coming up that's really exciting. I come from Leavenworth, Kansas, which, you know, when I say Leavenworth, most people go, oh, prisons.
Oh, the prison, yeah.
And that's the truth, is that within my hometown, within 20-mile radius, there's 5 prisons. And I have all, and I, when I was in the, when I was 12 or 13, I used to go with this little variety show that we had in town, and we would go perform in the prisons. So I've been in there, and I am also now very passionate about cannabis, you know, justice reform around cannabis, and I have a cannabis line, and I'm working with the Last Prisoner Project, which is working to get, you know, nonviolent offenders out. There's 40,000 prisoners locked away for cannabis while, you know, people are making millions of dollars selling cannabis. So it just doesn't make sense, and it's just disheartening. So with all of that thrown together, I'm going to do a concert in one of the prisons in Leavenworth. And it's just at the beginning stages right now, but I'm starting to write because I want to write a project about justice, about these times. And so I'm in the writing phase of it. And it's hard to, you know, imagine the end, but I know it's you know, it's going to be, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about the project.
Oh, that's so cool. Almost sounds like, what's the John Lennon song, John Sinclair, about the man they locked up for having two joints on him or something in 1970?
Yeah, John Sinclair. That's exactly it, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's incredible. Oh, I can't wait to hear. Mm. Oh, I mean, do you sit down? I'm sorry if it's a boring question. Do you sit down every day, like some people approach exercise, and say, I'm going to go write today? Or is it more when you feel inspired and have something in your head that you want to get down?
Well, it sort of depends on where I'm at in the process. Like right now, I'm in the conceptual process. Now it's about ideas and grabbing inspiration as it goes along, because inspiration is the most important part, because it's about being in spirit. It's becoming in the spirit of this project I want to do. And so I'll see something or hear something or feel something or think something that, this is the feel that I'm looking for there. And I just start gathering these pieces together, either in my mind or in my notebooks or in my, you know, my iPhone or wherever I'm collecting the information or the music or the rhythm or the thought. I collect them. And then probably in a few weeks, I will start giving myself, okay, from this time to this time, from, you know, 10 to, let's say, 1 o'clock. you know, this is time I'm going to come in here and I'm going to you know, start forming, you know, I'm gonna pick up a guitar and start forming songs and forming lyrics and forming, you know, ideas. And then it's more like an everyday thing. But I'm not one to, if it's not coming, if I'm sitting in here for 30 minutes and it just feels like torture, music should never feel like torture. So I'm going to go do something else. So it's providing my inspiration, a time and a place to form. But if it's not happening, no.
Do you tend to get your inspiration from looking outward or looking inward?
Ooh, both. Used to be looking outward. And then as I've gotten older and matured and, you know, experienced life, now it's about inward. Yeah. Mm. But they both sort of affect, one affects the other, and it's mostly about how one affects the other, how, you know, what I'm feeling inside can affect what's happening outside, and how, you know, do I let what happens outside change me inside? You know, that's that sort of thing.
I was sitting here and I was thinking of you, your music and your life, and the word that kept coming into my mind was survivor. You know, you've been through so much and people are really hurting right now. There's the virus, rampant social injustice, political divisions. There's a lot of fear out there. What would you say to people right now who really are scared?
Oh, I would say if you could really pull back and look at where we are as a human race, if we could really take a moment to go general, go up and look and see that we are further along than we've ever been in our existence. We are closer, we are better than we've ever been. And that's one of the reasons that you see these injustices, these things that you know, make us stop and go, wait a minute, we're not that. You know, when you see a policeman's knee, you know, kill someone, you're like, wait a minute, that's not who I am. That's not what I want to be. That's not the world I want to be in. And because there's such a fierce response to that, that's what moves us forward. So just know that the way you feel right now is causing all of us to want better. And that's what moves us as a society. That's what I truly believe we're going to move, because it has felt like we've been pulled back these last 4 years, that we are going to feel a momentum forward. And all you have to do is keep believing that we get better. We do. We recognize what we don't like. We recognize what we don't want. And we most of all recognize that we are all diverse, that we are never all going to agree. We cannot, and we don't want to. That's not what this life is about, variety and about difference. And if we relax in the diversity, relax in the knowing that, okay, everyone's different, we look different, we love different, we want differently, and to allow the freedom in that, That's the challenge for our leaders. So we are still moving forward. No matter how you feel, no matter what the news is telling you, we are moving forward through this. We are getting better.
That's a beautiful way to look at it. It makes me think of the story you told about the head of your first record label, who I won't name, who said, yeah, it's fine to be gay. Just don't wave a flag, which is crazy. And now you're at Pride parades.
Yeah, nobody had come out. They didn't know. They didn't know what happened. And before then, it was, you know, people lost their jobs, you know, lost everything. So, you know, so it was just that fear. And all you got to do is just stand up to the fear and go, eh, you know what, I'm not afraid of that. If people aren't going to listen to me because I'm gay, well, that's their loss, you know. And if you can move through it like that, then that changes. I've discovered that every time I did that, every time I, you know, said, well, this is my truth, and I'm going to speak it. I'm going to just tell you where I'm at, that it unburdened me and it put the choice on the other person. And then, okay, if that bugs you, okay, go ahead, go away. You know, and that way it just opens up everything.
Speak truth is a hell of a motto. We'll be right back. The year you came out publicly was the year you released Yes, I Am. That must have been such a validating moment to have that be the breakthrough, that title.
You know, it was funny. This was just right. It was definitely before social media, but it was just as the internet was coming out. So everything took a whole lot longer back then. You know, this was 26 years ago, 27 years ago. And so this process of coming out, whereas today it would be, oh, she came out, boom, everyone would know in a day. It took like over a year for it to really start to take hold. And then this album, when I wrote Yes, I Am, the song, it had nothing to do with being, well, all my songs have to do with being gay, but anyway, but you know, I wasn't speaking about it in the song. And, you know, it's a love song. It's a sort of passionate, possessive love song. And yet then realizing, oh, that's such a positive statement. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And then realizing, oh, I came out. Oh, that's going to mean a whole lot of things if I say yes, I am. So I cheekily put it out, but also, you know, it served its purpose. It's a fine album. I'm very happy with that album.
Yes, yes, it is. You know, I never thought of that. Yes, I am. It's such a positive statement. You know, it reminds me of like a John and Yoko kind of thing. Just a declaration of whatever it is you are, yes,
you can
okay.
Continue comparing me to John Lennon all day long.
And haven't even gotten a chance to thank you 15 years later for your incredible Janis Joplin tribute performance, too. So while we're at it.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
What has making music taught you about yourself?
Well, it's given me the opportunity to be creative, to express my emotions in a way that I wouldn't allow myself to do personally. You know, I came from Kansas, a very repressed Midwestern sort of upbringing. We didn't, you know, you don't cause any trouble, you don't get angry, you just, you know, be a good girl and, you know, do your job and work hard and go home. And being able to express my emotions, especially the dark, you know, passionate ones, it taught me that, you know, I'm more than what I was raised with, you know, I'm more than what I was raised to be.
Wow, that's a beautiful thing to learn about oneself. My last question is the question I always like to end on this show. What's the first thing you want to do when this pandemic is over? You know, if you could snap your fingers and have everything be back to normal, there are trips you want to take, people you want to hug.
I want to hug everyone. I've always been a hugger, and this is, I don't think it's healthy for us. As human beings are made to interact with other people. The healthiest human beings are the ones that have relationships. And so this isolation is, I mean, I believe it was part of what contributed to my son's death. You know, this sort of isolation, this idea that you're alone. So yes, I want to hug everyone I love. I want to hug strangers. And I cannot wait to step on stage to an audience. There's nothing like it. It's something that only a few people know, and it is just that community, that, you know, that ritual of singing and dancing and moving all together. I really want to get back to that.
As a fan, I want to say I can't wait to see you back there.
Amen. Come on, let's do it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio Home Edition, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio and other shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.